Just roll your voicemail as the opening of this show.
Oh,
by the
way. Yes. Okay.
Speaking of which.
Oh, it used to be the Beach Boys. It has been the Smiths for a while now.
Has it?
It used
to
be,
over?
I can try to be big in the eyes of the world, but what matters to me is what I can be to just one girl. And then it turned into, I don't remember if it's the chorus or the verse of, I was afraid I was way late, but which way, I don't remember what my outgoing message is. It's either, I don't think it is Stop Me. I know it is that song, but I
don't
think
I
say
it. I don't remember mine either. Everybody laughs at mine right now.
Oh, nothing's changed, I still love you. Oh, no, I wouldn't have said I love you on my outgoing message, so I don't know.
Oh, 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 stop me.
Right, stop me.
Stop me if you think that you heard this one before.
In full fidelity.
Nothing's changed.
Okay, well, that's what that song is. I was not on speakerphone, but okay. 5 years ago, I played here at the Bottom of the Hill. Is that
Bottom
what
of the Hill? That's the way most people pronounce it after one drink. where are you playing? Playing at the Bottom of the Hill.
I played there, and I had a stuffy nose and a cold.
And here you are back in beautiful San Francisco.
Chris, you and I have played a bunch of shows on and off for the past 2 years. I don't remember me having a super cold at any shows.
It's a San Francisco thing.
So the fog brings
the
fog in my nose.
Okay, would you introduce yourself, by the way? Because all this patter, if we just like launch the interview when I actually run it in the middle of all this patter, they'll just think it's some woman with a runny nose.
That's true.
Which could be the name of your next record.
Stuff. Sniffin' Sister is my next record.
The Sniffin' Sister. I remember them. They were good. A little close to the Scissor Sisters, but you know, it's possible. Yeah. It could work.
Actually, but I did have a rap band at 12 years old called the Wild Bananas of Cool, and our 12-inch fake record that we made on cardboard was called Sniffin' Sister because her younger sister, Claire, had allergies, and it was all about being annoyed by her. And then little did we know that there are sniffing sisters that do bad drugs, too, when you're growing up.
Considering the history of the people you've been involved with, I wasn't going to make a joke about that because you've been a little too close to a lot of sniffing sisters in your life, just to say the least.
I'm never stuffed up unless I come to San Francisco, and my name is Melissa Oftermauer, and I'm from Montreal, Canada, and bass is my primary instrument, and rock, well, heavy romantic rock music, or as you call it, melodic rock and roll, is what I make, and I have been for many, many, many years in various shapes and sizes and forms.
I like that. Was quite the interview is over. You've covered everything, but I like that heavy romantic rock and roll. But your dad was quite the, I mean, the CBC, the Montreal newspapers, a politician, and a street named after him.
Yes, one
so
of the
that's
coolest
pretty
men I
amazing.
Know. But my dad was an eternal bachelor man too, who it was a cool accident that he had me a daughter and it was a cool accident. We had an amazing relationship because he basically was like a teenage boy living this crazy young man eternal bachelor boulevardier maniac, and would spend the weekends with me and be the funnest father you could ever hope for. So he wasn't really what fathers would call or boyfriends would hope to be of husband material. He was a wacky, fun father material with not a very good track record with relationships with women. So I was lucky to have this amazing, eccentric father that I kind of knew it would be sort of dumb that if I grew up and married a guy like my father, I'd probably be a single mother.
So you date only lawyers and accountants?
Definitely not.
Yeah,
thank God I just graduated from musicians and have found my true guy. But no, I, you know, eccentric, creative, free living people, but ones that can hold a relationship.
What a concept.
But I was the relationship my father held as far as like a good, stable, loyal father. Very good.
And I read this little essay that you wrote a little while ago about being two and being in Kenya with your mom. There were two things that were amazing to me. I mean, literary translator, that's a pretty nifty, cool job.
Yeah, well, her passion is the language of French. Her passion is the language of French, and in particular, the French Canadian, Québécois, their cultural twist. And it's the old French of the kings prior to a certain... Basically, the French that came to Quebec spoke in a way, and then the fancy Parisians changed it to this other way, and the Parisians now look at the French Canadians and think that they're these peasants, but really they were the original kings and all these things. So my mother's obsession is to bring that culture and that language to the English language within theater.
There you are playing at some place named after Beefsteak.
It was an old Biff Portuguese.
Tech, for people don't know, it's not some guy named Biff who's got good technology. Biff Tech.
It is.
I said that really in bad English, didn't I? Hey, Biff Tech. Get your Biff Tech here.
The Biff Tech Saint Laurent was a decrepit Portuguese steakhouse that as soon as the local broke musicians found it and started giving more money to the bar than the chef was getting the steak out, they just shut the kitchen down. And in the kitchen, they put a double cassette and little fader machine thingy, and
that's
it became the DJ booth. And I got my first DJ gig.
So you're queuing up cassettes.
Queuing up cassettes. And then when I would have time, like between school and my busy DJ job at the Biff Tech, I would make mixtapes from my vinyl into a really crappy tape machine, and then I would have mixed tapes, and that means that I could have them on auto reverse even and play pool for the rest of the night.
But I want to know that exact moment when Billy Corgan introduced you to Courtney Love.
Okay.
And what that was like, because that must have been an interesting moment in history. That exact, if you could capture that dialogue in a 1 minute film, there's probably some great line there.
Yeah, I remember all the lines, so I could. Yeah, it was actually on a telephone call. I was home from school because, keep in mind, people, I was in school. I was in university. I never wanted to leave. I was finishing my photo degree. I was not looking to leave Montreal. I loved it. I had my own band there and everything. And the phone rang in my old rotary phone that I still have in my room. Billy says, "Hey, Melissa, I got good news and great news. What's the good news?" "The good news is I'm coming to Lollapalooza tomorrow and I can give all your friends tickets for free." I'm like, "Oh, great. The great news is you're going to join my friend Courtney's band." And I said, "No, I'm not. That sounds terrible. I don't want to do that." And he says, "What do you mean?" And his line was, "You don't want to be in the biggest female rock band and never have to tour?" And I said, "No, I don't. That doesn't sound fun." And keep in mind, everybody, and all due respect to Hole and the opportunity that was offered to me at the moment, was that Kristen, the bass player, had just died 1.5 months earlier, Kurt a month before that.
What a hell of a time to join a band.
Yes. So, and I had seen Hole play, and I had heard of the reputation, knew all about Courtney, and I knew that it was a handful, and that was not, I was not looking for a ticket out of my life. And actually, I had friends that knew her from the San Francisco days, too, who knew her from, and so I had heard so much about her prior to her even being Kurt's widow, for example. Anyway, and so this amazing weird thing happened where a week went by, and in the time that it took Courtney to find out that the girl in Montreal that Billy had recommended had said no, in that same time, my mother, my father, my best friend, who I was in a band with, and various other friends started to ask me, "Are you sure you don't want to reconsider that? That sounds like an incredible opportunity."
Your parents. But that, now that, now that says something about your parents right there.
I know. My father's line was, "You call Mr. Pumpkin and tell him that you are reconsidering."
Mr. Pumpkin.
Yes.
But no, but think about it. I mean, that's not normal parents.
No, my parents are
normal.
Not
normal parents asking you, suggesting to you that you should join a band. You know, that's as effed up as you already knew it was going to be before you got in it. And it's like, listen, daughter.
Yeah.
Get out of our lives. Go join. Yeah. Go join the Maniacs.
And let's remind people that by the age of 2, I had lived in a hut with chimpanzees, in a circus trailer in Wales, and in a post office box in Morocco. So I had already seen stuff. My parents were not afraid. And all of my parents, you know, some of my parents' friends or people who didn't know me back home would say to my friends or my family, "Aren't you terrified she's become a junkie?" And everyone rolled their eyes off and said, "Of course not. She's a really happy person." I was not in any threat. And, you know, I was not going to die, or I was just going to be a lot of work, you know, for someone who had had other plans. But then in the end, the real nail in the coffin was I got home from school and my roommate said, "Courtney Love called you. She wants you to call back." And I called her back and I said, "Hello." And she said, "Listen, I just want to know why you don't want to join my band. And could you at least get on a plane, come meet me, come meet us in Seattle, talk to us, see how it goes." And she was very convincing and very intelligent and all these great things. And I went, I packed an overnight bag, and I thought, not likely that I'm going to do this. I remember I listened to Live Through This on a cassette on my Walkman on the flight there. It was the first time I was even listening to it. I was like, well, I guess I'll buy this record and start seeing what it's about. And then there was some magical, like, it was a flash of destiny when I landed in Seattle and they picked me up at the baggage claim, and Courtney and Patty Schemmel were standing there, and they picked up, one picked up my bass, the other one picked up my overnight bag, and I looked at these ladies' faces and I realized that they were my destiny and I had to do it. And that was just sort of, that was it. And I thought, okay. And then in the days after I'd arrived, Patty did reveal to me that they had been auditioning bass players, and Courtney had not only not gone to any of the auditions, but hadn't met any of the women.
Wow.
And so, you know, Courtney knew something I didn't know or something. And she kind of led me into her world and opened a phenomenal amounts of doors for my hunt of music and art and travel and people.
And then Mr. Pumpkin, one of the quotes that I saw is that you say that Mr. Pumpkin being in that band helped really define yourself as a musician.
Yeah, my 5 years on hold defined me as a human being as far as life lessons of humanity, tragedy, chaos, everything. Travel, live in LA, what the hell's happening, la la. And then my year with the Pumpkins was the defining music lesson of my life. Learning their catalog was the best thing I could have ever, ever, ever asked for. It was fantastic.
And now it is 11, I'm going to do
oh
the Casey
God,
Kasem.
It's so long.
It is 11 years later since she left Hole.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I was in Vancouver this week. And I had sort of forgot, but not really, but I was doing a radio interview. And the last show I ever played with Hole was at Vancouver. It was at the end of this Cross Canada tour. And I woke up and we were at the best place we had ever been musically. Courtney was in a great state, other than the fact that she was leaning more towards films. And we, our touring in the future was held on hold because she was maybe in another movie or something. And I woke up in Vancouver that day and I realized, huh, I think I'm going to quit while I'm ahead here. This has been a great ride. We finished a record that I'm very proud of. We just played some of the best shows we'd ever played as a band, and I flew home to L.A. and started writing my letter, and it was just a coincidence that that same month, Darcy from the Pumpkins left, and then that's when that happened.
But now, just skipping a lot of history,
yes.
You are totally, I mean, you are a multimedia artist. These days.
Well, back to my original, remember Montreal and
yes.
the cool parents and all
you're
that.
You're all prepared
I've been,
for that.
Yeah.
You've been, but that,
been
going, that good. That's yes. what I wanted because.
Yes. So this is like, what am I going to do to make the most of my life, and how am I going to embrace every single passion and desire and goal and thing I can die proud of? Everything is like the end of the world. Nothing is like a casual decision in my life. Everything is, I've got
I'm
to do
sorry.
It at maximum capacity right now. So.
I understand that concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was, you know, and I'm still, yeah, I'd like to take a break actually occasionally and just enjoy some sort of time off. But for some reason I can't, as far as I just have like a fire burning to make the most of and discover and explore and change and challenge and jump off cliffs and try to do things differently. I'm not trying to sound like an amazing hero. I'm just saying that I put a fire. There's a fire under my own ass that I put, that whether it's because my parents lived very wild paths as well. When it came to going solo is one thing, and when it came to going multimedia is another thing, but it's all the extension of the same thing, which is that I was born and raised in a very, very eclectic, incredible environment. I went to art school my entire life. I studied art history. I studied visual arts, performing arts, music, everything from the age of 6 years old or prior, and my whole life has been devoted to connecting, creating expression, finding truth, digging for beauty, all of these things. And so, you know, my years in Hole in the Pumpkins were training of tools. As a human being, I was training as a human, and then as a musician, I was being trained. And then when I was freed or graduated from these incredible intensive school lessons, I then had to do my thing very, very thoroughly. So first was find my voice as a musician and make an album, reach out to all the musicians who have inspired me and blown my mind and have become friends or that I want to become friends with, make that record, put it on the map that I can make a record, mainly to myself. Like when I made that record, I self-financed, self-produced as far as like I didn't have a record company. I didn't have a manager. I just needed to do it. I didn't even know if I would release it. I did it because I needed to know that the shy girl who would blush because she's a redhead, etc., could one day make her own record. So I did that. And then in this case, the moment I was finished the touring of that first record, that completed 10 solid years of full-time music. Whole Pumpkins, my first solo, was a decade solid. So then I got off of that, and I thought, okay, well, what's the next chapter? Well, I'm not going to ignore all the visual conceptual art stuff that I had prior to this 10 years of music. So now my challenge and obligation is I have to go and get all that stuff involved in this and all of my passions outside of music, which is everything from art history, the mythology, to painting movements, and wanting to expand as an artist and collaborate in the same way that I love collaborating with drummers or guitar players, engineers. I thought, what would it be like to collaborate with a phenomenal filmmaker?
Tony Stone,
phenomenal filmmaker. And I had seen a cut of his first feature film, Severed Ways, The Norse Discovery of America, which I feel like San Francisco would love because it's epic art, independent, digital Viking period piece, but with Brian Eno and black metal as the soundtrack. It's very, very contemporary and beautiful and one of a kind. And I saw that and I thought, okay. Well, meanwhile, also I had a major label record contract that fell apart in the middle of the making of this project. And that's when I really said, okay, well, I don't even know how I'm going to release this record because first I got to get a lawyer to get my recordings back from Capitol. So while he does that, then I'll go in the woods.
I love the way you just very casually, you did major label and then three sentences later managed to identify them.
Oh, I don't mind. I was on Capitol Records.
No, but most people would. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
We're allowed to talk. I'm allowed to talk about this because I work with all of them anyway. But
yeah, I liked being with
but
them.
But EMI's got their issues right now.
Yeah. But they were the first to go because they actually were
trying to sell
first
Abbey Road, for crying out loud.
Oh, I mean. Well, they can't afford to hold it or something.
I know.
No, they have financial problems. It's true. But I have no complaints about my time there or about my time not there. I'm happy. I will go with it. The best thing that ever happened was being able to, in the middle of Out of Our Minds, this project, get released from it. Best thing because it gave me all of the freedom to just go nuts and go make this film and then take this as far as I could. And then once I took it creatively as far as I could, I thought, well, it would be irresponsible of me to just hand this over to some other label who won't know what to do with it. So then I better start my own label. And hey, why don't I leave my manager and agent while I'm at it and just manage myself and figure out how to... So I did that.
All very
really fun.
All really brilliant moves, undoubtedly, because it's all working. But what is interesting to me, though, this doing it on your own thing, this DIY thing that you're self-effacing about, you're doing, come on.
Really?
These human beings that are on this record, this director of yours, these Vikings that you love
so much,
these Vikings that aren't from Minnesota, you know, that you like so much. You know, I mean, come on. Then you get to do a thing at the ICA and you get to do the kind of things you're going to do here. And so it's very easy to be self-effacing, but you're playing with a lot of tools and you're a professional.
And
you're not messing around here.
I think that long term, I know I've done the right thing. I know that all these moves are going to pay off. It just
it's a lot of work.
Right now, it's the amount of workload, which is why I have the sniffles, is just... But again, remember, I'm making up for lost time because I lived in La La Land, clouds, fantasy, la la for like 10 years. So I didn't even know how anything was getting done. I had to the brain.
You show up, you record, you leave.
Exactly. Yeah. So this has just been an amazing, but I knew that I had to do it. It's like, take responsibility for your life, lady. So I did. I needed to take responsibility of how all this was getting done and make sure that I did it right and worked hard. So yeah, I guess it's just that maybe it's actually because I'm in United States of America, and that I don't mean to. I live in this country. I'm born in Canada, but I'm a dual citizen. I've lived in the U.S. for the majority of my adult life. I love it. However, I do have more of an active life in music in Canada and mainly in Europe. And that's just maybe the self-effacing also comes from the fact that I feel like in the U.S. I'm literally carrying this avant-garde 10-ton beast that I'm trying to shove into two people's mouths, and it's not really working. And that was, by the way, not my goal. I'm not trying to become be some amazing, eclectic, bizarre, wild animal that you can't control.
Oh, yes, you are. Oh, come on. It's purely obvious.
I think my parents were both wild animals. Montreal is a wild card. It's just redheads are wild cards. It's all a wild card, and I'm just trying to make do.
So what is the plan, man? You're going to continue touring behind this a little longer, and then are there other things in the hopper?
So the plan, 2010 was always devoted to Out of Our Minds. So 2010, right. There's a few months left. This is the last day of our week of the West Coast. Later this month, I go to the New England and the northeast of Canada, and then Europe for 7 weeks. So Europe is where I'm going to give like the full blown rock tour experience to, and then I will get home just before Christmas and 2011 will come and I will start imagining how to write my second follow-up, which makes it my third record.
Your second follow-up.
And there'll be some touring next year. There's like a couple of countries in the south of Europe I hadn't got to, so I'm going to be able to get to them in February. So there's a couple of next year will be fun, sort of light occasional touring. I have learned that I don't need to disappear for 3 years because now that I've made a second record, I realize, oh, I could just play shows every once in a while. What a thought. Whereas I hadn't done that when after my first record, I like pulled myself out of society practically and literally moved to the woods and did all these. But making a new record, yes, and continuing to collaborate with Tony Stone. On Monday, next week, sometime soon, we are premiering the second music video for Out of Our Minds, which is going to be part of a three-part little trilogy of music videos. So Out of Our Minds was the first, Meet Me on the Dark Side second, and this winter we're going to be working on the third, and that's sort of an extension of the fantasy film part that brings the character from the film into these various other places that include fireballs and fireworks and Viking churches.
We've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Okay.
And this fills out the rest of the lovely hour.
Okay.
And it's two of your songs is the bread.
Okay.
And then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.
I was late, I was way late. Stop me. Oh, stop me. Stop me if you think you heard this one before.